Welcome to another edition of Strategic Planning for Business Owners. My name is Steve Young. I am a Senior Vice President of Wealth Management at UBS. I am also the Senior Member of the Business Transition Consulting Team, where we focus on working with owners of closely held and family-owned businesses. Today, we have an interesting topic. We have two guests with me today on the podcast, and we're going to be talking about donor advice funds. So my guests are Kim Ledger and Jordan Richardson. So without further ado, let me turn it over to Kim for an introduction, and we'll go to Jordan. Kim.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for having us today, Steve. I'm Kim Ledger, and I'm the Senior Vice President of Complex Assets. So I help donors all day, every day, make gifts of illiquid assets or non-cash assets to their donor advice fund.
Thank you. And Jordan, quick introduction, please.
Yeah. You bet, Steve. Well, I am in Des Moines, Iowa. I have spent most of my career in the DAP space. My current role is advocating for donor advice funds, providing consultation for financial advisors and their clients, and finding avenues to be even more efficient and effective in our giving, particularly alongside taxable moments.
Very good. And just for our listeners' benefit, DAF is Donor Advice Fund, or DAF, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. So, Jordan, let me ask you, can you just kind of walk the listeners through the ins and outs of what a donor advice fund is, how they work, how they operate, and how to take advantage of that opportunity?
Yeah, I sure can. Well, there's a lot of definitions out there in the universe. The one that I like the best is really simple, three words. Donor advice fund is a charitable investment account. And I think that's a really compelling definition because it speaks to not just the purpose, but also the long-term implications. The purpose is charitable giving. You contribute to your donor advice fund. When you have taxable moments or you're planning for future charitable giving, you give out of that fund to charity over time. But then in the middle there, we have this great opportunity to invest those charitable dollars for, you know, potentially short-term or long-term growth, just more assets available to give over time.
I know a lot of times clients will ask us about setting up a foundation or family foundation, but unless you have several, I don't know what the actual number cutoff would be where it becomes feasible to consider that. Can you real quickly draw a compare and contrast scenario for foundations versus donor funds?
Yeah, you bet. And I think historically that balance number was part of the tipping point. I think that's starting to deteriorate a little bit as we look further into, we get more sophisticated in the DAF world, but also we look to what is the ultimate objective of the client, of the donor. One distinction, the donor advice fund is owned by a sponsoring public charity. And so that sponsoring public charity does all of the charity vetting and the annual tax filing. We're on the private foundation side. If you have a private foundation, you're filing your own tax filing, a 990 PF, a little bit of administrative work on your side to do that, and also some cost and some transparency that you may not desire, where the donor advice fund could be more anonymous. The other caveat is donor advice funds are designed truly for pure charitable giving, for lack of a better word. Any distribution out of the donor advice fund has to go directly to a charitable organization, while that private foundation has more flexibility on expenses that are tangentially related to charitable giving, like paying for a staff member or paying expenses related to a charitable gift.
And I think one thing to consider when setting a donor advice fund up is when you actually make a donation to the donor advice fund, you are making an irrevocable gift to the donor fund, correct? Okay. And then even though we're not permitted to give tax advice, there is an element of deductibility when you make a contribution to the donor fund. And then those funds, as you mentioned, can be invested for the purpose of generating additional appreciation and income, which can then be gifted out at some time in the future. The gifter or the grantor of the gift takes the deduction in the year that they make the gift to the donor fund. But when funds are granted out of the donor fund to charities, there is no longer a tax deduction for the grantor at that time, correct?
You said it exactly right. And there may be some listening to this episode that are thinking, well, what is the point? I know what charities I want to give to you. Well, I think part of the point is we can split that. And, you know, some of the listeners on this call are business owners thinking about, you know, potential upcoming liquidation events. Those are big taxable moments. But we may have a desire to plan for a larger charitable contribution in those big taxable moments. than we would just outright giving to charity anyway. So this is a really great tool to plan around those moments.
Well, that's a great segue to Kim. I'm going to ask Kim if you could step up to the mic. You do a lot of work in the, what we say, refer to as the complex asset type structure. Maybe shed a little bit of light about that and how that might play into our conversation today.
Yeah, we work with a lot of business owners that are preparing for or like have just entered the process of selling their business or some sort of liquidity event where it could be a secondary, it could be a recap, it could be a variety of things, but there's an opportunity to get some liquidity out of the business. So prior to that event becoming what we call all but certain to occur, before it's a bind, there's a, any kind of a binding agreement, the donor can make a gift of that business interest to their donor advice fund. And then the donor advice fund then sells those shares and or that asset, I should say. And then liquidity comes into the donor advice fund for investment and grant making purposes. But yeah, the benefit of doing that is that the donor avoids the capital gains taxes and any income that's attributed to them, you know, while the DAF owns. So it's a great efficient way to make a gift to a donor advice fund.
So just to take a step back, so to make a donation to the donor fund, you can provide contributions in different types of asset format. So cash is obviously the easiest, right? Everybody knows you can write a check.
Mm-hmm.
You can donate shares out of your portfolio that may have high appreciation into it, in it. So you want to transfer that appreciation to the donor fund, which doesn't pay the taxes that you would if you cash those out, paid your taxes, and then made a gift out of the residual. And then the other way you just mentioned is they can actually give shares of their business to the donor fund in anticipation of a sale. And there's some, I know there's some rules around that. For example, some of them may be IRS rules, some of them may be your rules, I'm not sure, but maybe you can shed some light on that. So timing-wise, you certainly don't want to be gifting shares to the donor fund, you know, 3-4 years down the road, I would think. You probably want to do it very close to when that transaction happens. Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong. And then the other thing is, you know, how much can you deduct and do you want to make those shares available to the donor fund before or after a term sheet is put on the table? So maybe talk a little bit about the timing of that, because we do get a lot of questions around when is it the right time for me to do this?
And that's a great question, starting with timing. So we get asked the question a lot. And the good news is that I'm not going to make that decision for someone, but I'll give you generally, because that's considered tax advice. But what we generally see and what the IRS says is that, look, you can't have that binding agreement. It needs to be while there's still some risk that the deal can fall through. And so it's, they call that an assignment of income. So they believe that, hey, if once you've reached that point, and I've had, here's a for instance, I had a group of business owners were selling their business and we'd worked on this gift for months. And we get down to a Friday. They said, all right, we're ready to make the gift today. And it was the CPA and the attorneys, everybody who had been involved. They said, okay, we're executing today. So we executed the documents, meaning that the transfer, the gift was made that day. We came in on Monday and they said, all right, we're going to the closing table today. We're going to close today. I said, wait a minute, how is that not an assignment of income? And they said, can we negotiate it all weekend? And we still don't know when we sit down at the table that we are actually signing documents. So the CPA and the attorney felt very comfortable that that was not an assignment of income because there was still a lot of risk that that deal could fall through. And then I've had other instances where it's been a month ahead. There was one outstanding item. And it's like, okay, you know, one more point of negotiation that they were trying to work through. And so we had to hustle to get that gift completed before that. Now they, you talked about the term sheet. So they were under an LOI. It was a non-binding LOI. So we do see people making gifts after they've signed an LOI, but it really comes down to where are they in that due diligence process? How close are they to having that deal done but that's where we're going to really rely on the donor's tax advisor to comment on that and really provide assistance on that. So does that help with the timing?
So you guys need to do a little bit of due diligence as well, right? So walk us through how you do that.
Mm-hmm. We usually gather, and most general advice funds are requesting the same kind of information, but you know, looking at any of the governing documents, any shareholder agreements or operating agreements, whatever those might be, rules of the road. We want to know what are our rights and responsibilities as an owner of this business. And then we take a look at financials. So with that, people often ask us to sign their non-disclosure agreements. That's typical. We're happy to do that. Any work that we do on this stuff, of course, is confidential. Talk about it with family and friends. We don't make it public information, of course. So yeah, we work through that due diligence process. Often what we'll see is that there's some sort of transfer restriction that's very common. So, you know, what needs to happen is that a waiver, does it require board approval, right to first refusal, those may need to be waived. So we'll look at things like that inside the documents. And those are usually pretty easy hurdles to get over. But it is something that the donor needs to keep in mind is, you know, do I need to get a managing member approval? Do I need to have board approval? So there's some of that process in it. Our process, once we get the documents, we can usually get those reviewed within 3 to 4 business days and come back and say, hey, I noticed you've got these transfer restrictions. Again, that's very normal. And then just talk about what the next steps are then from the company perspective. And the company will drive that transfer process. So unlike what you're used to working with marketable securities, where there's a pretty standard transfer process, each company is going to have their own process for transferring that interest to the donor advised fund or to another entity. So they'll drive that process and we'll just review all of those documents too. So that's what I mean by working through all of that and what the implications are. It's not unusual to have a group of people together, coming together to work through it quickly and efficiently to get the gift completed.
So you mentioned the transferability, and my thought is, you know, with cash and with marketable securities, we know what the value of that gift will be when it's given. How do you value a gift of company stock that's not publicly traded? Who determines that value?
So there are two different values. So there's a value that we'll use for our general ledger. And if there's going to be a sale happen pretty quickly, a lot of times we'll use that sale price as our value. Or will, you know, if they've had a 409A or some other business valuation done recently, we'll use that to post that gift to the charities or the donor advised fund's general ledger. Now, the second value, which could be different, is likely going to be different, is going to be the value that is determined in a qualified appraisal. And that is what the IRS requires when you go to file your taxes. Your tax preparer is going to prepare like form 8283, but they're going to have to get a qualified appraisal, which is different than a business valuation. If you've done a number of estate planning valuations, it's kind of like that, but the discounts are are different when you're making a charitable gift. It's important that the appraiser knows it's for charitable gifting purposes. Yeah, Bill. The IRS has really specific guidelines on who can do the qualified appraisal and what needs to be in it. So that's a great question.
Thanks. That really helps people understand the transaction and how it's put together and then the valuations and the necessary work that needs to go into it in order to transfer non-traded business stock. I said a few minutes ago that the donor fund doesn't pay taxes, but I think that might be just a little bit inaccurate. Isn't there such thing as unrelated business tax that may occur in those transactions? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, unrelated business income tax, or UBIT is what we call it. It depends on the business interest. That's one where you got to work really closely with the CPA and see if it makes sense.
And then one last question. I'm going to bring Jordan back into the conversation. If, in fact, there is tax that's owed by the donor advice fund, does that affect the value that the grantor can recognize in the gift? Am I getting too
great
much?
Great question.
Okay. I was afraid I was getting too far in the weeds.
Such a Well, that's such a great question. I'm glad you asked that because that does not impact the donor's charitable deduction.
Okay, good.
So the qualified appraisal will capture the value of the shares. And what happens on the tax perspective happens inside the DAF. So the DAF is run basically as its own balance sheet. So any taxes that we have to pay are going to come out of that account. And it usually comes out of the sale proceeds of the company. So when it's sold, then we have cash in there and that's what we use. If it's an S corporation, we'll set aside 20%. We'll reserve 20% until the taxes have been filed and paid, and then credit back anything we haven't used. But on income, it just depends. We have to look at, it's a case-by-case basis on whether we'll reserve funds on other entities.
Okay, great. Well, thanks. Jordan, I'm going to pull you back into the conversation here. Let's talk a little bit about the different types of assets that can be contributed to a donor fund. I know we talked a lot about privately held companies here in the last few minutes, but there's other things that can be gifted as well. But there's rules about how much you can recognize for deduction. And again, I know we're not giving tax advice. We're just talking in generalities here, and everybody's encouraged to talk to their own tax advisor if this is something you're going to do. But there are some basic rules about how much deduction you can take based on the type of gift you give to the donor fund. So kind of walk us through that, Jordan.
Yeah, you bet. Well, just about any asset that has financial value could be considered as a charitable gift, whether directly to charity or through a donor advice fund. From the IRS perspective, assets are, for the most part, placed in one of two buckets. They're either cash or they are appreciated assets.
So within that non-cash bucket, what are some things that people donate that maybe wouldn't be top of mind for the listeners? Can you donate an art collection or timberland or vacation property? What are some of the different things that you guys see coming your way?
Yeah, all the above. We see a lot of real estate, whether that's residential, commercial, land itself. Often there's lots of capital gains tied to real estate, and that can be a really compelling gift. I mentioned earlier, I'm in Des Moines, Iowa, so I'm in the middle of farm country, and you can donate farm machinery, you can donate grain. I think grain is a really compelling asset to give.
That's interesting.
Just because of the unique taxation there, that it flows to the donor advice fund as not reported as income for the farmer when they make that contribution. Cryptocurrency is another asset that you can give, as well as, you know, a life insurance policy. We can go all the way down the line of, again, assets of value.
So in the real estate or the, like, you know, the more harder assets that are gifted, are those with a business interest? Are those anticipation of a sale? Or is this just, you know, like, hey, I got 50 acres of farmland in Idaho that I don't know what to do with. I got them from my grandparents. So I'm just going to give it to the donor fund and they can figure out what they want to do with it. Do I have to have a buyer kind of standing in the halls waiting to purchase that? Or do I just give it to the fund and the fund sells the property and takes the cash? How's that work?
Yeah, most of the time there's got to be some marketability and a you know, desire for relatively short-term liquidity there, just in part because you know, owning that real estate in the donor advice fund doesn't really accomplish the ultimate goal of giving to charity from there. But I'll let Kim speak more to that timing.
Yeah, you're spot on, Jordan. Sometimes people will have somebody that would be interested in it. You want to be really careful you don't set up a step transaction. So with real estate, but yeah, generally either one, if somebody has indicated an interest, you know, you just don't want to create any kind of a contract, verbal or anything like that. So yeah, that most of the time we're hiring a real estate advisor or a realtor, I guess I should say, to sell the property.
Makes sense. Okay. We spent the last 20 minutes or so talking about how to get things into the donor fund. Let's talk about how to get funds out of the donor fund. So, you know, I get a question every once in a while. If I did a donor fund, can I give money from the fund to my church, or can I do this kind of charity? So there's obviously going to be some type of due diligence involved with who the gift is going to make sure that they're a qualified charity. But there's probably a list of, I would say, recipients that are, or categories of recipients that are maybe ineligible to receive gifts from the donor fund. Can you speak briefly about that process, and how does one know if they can gift to their favorite charity if they open up a donor fund? And what types of charities, or what should I say, what types of recipients may be ineligible to receive funds?
Well, every donor advice fund program has their own unique criteria on any potential restrictions they might throw at that. But taking those program-related restrictions away, we're really looking at four types of organizations. So we're looking at 501c3 public charities, as well as, you know, three others would be religious institutions, like a church, for example, that may not file as a 501c3, but they get the tax status anyway, educational institution like a public school, or a unit of government. And I think that's the one that sometimes caused people to wrinkle their eyebrows. But the idea there is you might give to a small municipality, not for the sake of giving to the city generally, but because they're raising funds for a playground project. We can do that, the donor advice fund. What we can't do is give to non-charitable organizations or organizations that live in that 501c universe in something other than a 501c3 public charity. So we can't give to a 501c3 private foundation, nor can we give to something like a 501c4, like a Rotary Club, for example.
Gotcha. And then you have a link, I know, that people can check out their particular charity to see if they qualify or don't qualify. So I generally encourage people to use that when they're trying to decide whether or not they want to do a donor fund or not. Let's go ahead and just kind of wrap up. As I said, we are kind of bumping up to our time here. And maybe, Kim, take a few minutes and just a couple bullet points you want people to walk away from listening to this and maybe consider after they've heard our program today.
If you're going through a transaction now, or if you're contemplating a transaction with your business, it would be good to have that conversation sooner rather than later. That's my words of wisdom.
Jordan, a couple bullet points from your point of view before we wrap up here.
Yeah, well, you know, one is for the listeners here to talk to your team of advisors. I think your advisors are great advocates and resources for you around conversations like, how much can I give this year? What assets are the right assets in my net worth statement to consider? And just, you know, the ability to deepen your charitable impact through that strategic asset selection. The other piece I'll mention, we're recording this on November 19th. You may be listening to this at a future date, but if you're listening to it here at the end of 2024, there are some year-end deadlines to be mindful of. And again, different donor advice and programs across the country are going to have different deadlines here. But the one that is universally true is December 31st. To receive tax deductibility for your charitable gifts in calendar year 2024, that asset has to be received in the donor advised fund on or before December 31st. Maybe the one exception to that would be if you're writing a check and putting it in the mail. In that case, that envelope has to be postmarked by December 31st to be retroactively recognized for this year.
Great points. I appreciate that as well. Well, we've covered a lot, guys, and we could probably continue on for another hour or so, just all of the examples of how we've helped people take advantage of such a great opportunity for gifting and tax mitigation and just all the benefits that come along with having a donor fund. Kim, Jordan, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate all your input and taking time out of your busy schedules to be with us this afternoon.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having us.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.